Welcome to this edition of When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine, a discussion of sustainable living and what that means to you and me. I'm Jay Warmke.
And I'm Annie Warmke.
That indeed you are. And today we're going to talk about a recent UN climate report, or we're all going to die, and we really mean it this time. So,
This is such an upbeat show. I know.
Well, it's sort of a little bit, I was feeling like when I saw this report, a little bit like everybody talks about COVID fatigue and things like that. Okay, all right, I'm tired of hearing about this. And I think they do run the risk of saying, okay, we have serious problems, and we've heard this so many times, yet governments seem not to do anything about it.
Well, that's going to be the challenge today.
Yeah,
let me tell you a word we can use that I find to be much more hopeful.
Okay, tell me.
And instead of climate change, I'm interested in adaptation.
Adaptation.
Because that means that, okay, the climate's always been changing. It changes every year. You know, as a farmer, I know this. But if I'm talking about adaptation, what I'm saying is I am going to prepare the plants, the soil, the livestock, the community, the neighborhood, everything with the idea that it's just a norm.
Okay.
This is what happened.
I know you did the research on this, but let me give you my take on it and you tell me why I'm wrong. Okay. I assume, clearly the climate has changed, but we're dealing with so dramatic a change that's clearly induced by human activity since the Industrial Revolution. So they've been warning us really since the 70s. If we don't make major changes in our lifestyle, then we're going to have serious consequences to this global world. Well, we haven't made those changes, and we are already past the turning point. Now it's a matter of how do we adapt? How do we deal with these changes that we have wrought upon us? But from a government standpoint, it's not really effective to tell people, okay, it's already too late, and now you're going to have to deal with these things, but change your behavior anyway, because people are going to throw up their hands and say, all right, well, you know what? I'll just party like it's 1999, because we may not make it to 2099.
Which part did you want me to correct?
Tell me I'm wrong, okay?
Okay, so first of all, the challenge. So there's no right or wrong. It's not that clear. Everything's pretty gray around all of this, as are most issues. But the reality is that the government and the scientists have been telling us that all of this is coming. And at the same time, the marketers of the corporations have been telling us a different message. And that is that if we as individuals would just do, you know, fix our leaky faucet or
buy another Coca-Cola.
Yeah. Or recycle, whatever, that this is going to make great change around climate and what's coming, and also adaptation. And the problem with that is it's mostly baloney, because it's the corporations that have to make the major changes that are going to change the carbon footprint of the world.
Okay.
And that's what I hope we're going to talk about today, because I'm
gotcha.
Sick to death of hearing, if I just brown bagged my lunch, or I just stopped eating meat, or
put a brick in your toilet, you know.
Yeah, or eat local produce, or recycle, or plant-based meals, or
take
a 5-minute shower.
And all those are good, but they're not going to they're not going to make the kind of systemic change that we need to have happen.
No, because it's not where the problems really lie.
All right, well, just to back up. Okay, I want to back up. I backed up first.
Okay. Beep, beep, beep.
Okay, so this report that we're talking about, the UN climate report, was released in late February of 2021. And the language in this was
Wait, you're looking at a different one than I did.
Okay, well, it's the same thing. They just say same thing.
Oh, they just recycle it.
They
okay.
just fold it different. It's like the Mexican food. It's all the same, just folded differently.
Oh, my word, that was not
so anyway, So the language is very, very stark in this. They were using terms like it's a red alert for the planet, 2021 is going to be a make or break year in confronting the global climate emergency. And it's clearly sunk in with the world's public. You know, they did a survey of over a million people, 1.2 million people were surveyed. And of those, you know, about two thirds, about 65% of those folks said that we are living in a climate emergency. So they have been able to get the message across. People are aware that this is a significant issue, but it seems like there's a disconnect between people saying, yeah, it's a problem, and then, yes, I am going to make changes that will correct this problem.
Okay, here's the problem. It's all in one sentence in a nutshell. It's that we have been too slow. That's a quote from the 2019 Climate Change and Adaptation Report. We've been too slow to detach economic growth from emission growth.
Gotcha.
And that's how it all sort of boils down to everything you're talking about. So these reports have four major priorities. One is that they want to be more ambitious about national climate plans that will keep the global warming to 1.5 degrees above pre-industrial levels, which in my mind is like, not going to work. Strategies not based on the current cooperation level of the governments and industry. Strategies to reach net zero emissions by 2050. I don't know. A comprehensive program of support for climate adaptation and resilience and financing for sustainable and green economies. There you go. That's the one.
Okay, well, when I hear these things, and maybe it's just my committee meeting brain shutting off, but it seems like whenever you're confronted with a problem, the governmental response is, let's form a commission and study it. And they contemplate their navels for a while, and then they come out with a report, and everybody goes, yeah, that's a big problem. And then they go on and do what they were doing anyway. That seems like how this has always worked.
Right. But here's where it's coming from now. There are three levels that they say need to take place. The first one for sustainable development, which is what they're really talking about, is local action. And that requires embedding the needed transitions, meaning things to do with corporations and how they function in day-to-day business, into the policies, budgets, institutions, and regulatory frameworks of government, cities, and local authorities. So that's the first thing. And that's not happening. It is to some slight degrees, but where we live, they wouldn't even know what some of those words mean. So the second one is people action. And that is including action by youth and civil society, the media, there's a big challenge, the private sector, that's a big challenge, unions, academia, and other stakeholders to generate an unstoppable movement pushing for required transformation, which they're really talking about is push for revolution, because you're not going to take the power away from corporations. You're not going to get them to give it up. It's got to be taken. And then the third thing is at the core of the UN's plan for people, for the planet, are these really three things that they think you should be tackling. One is poverty, which always seems insurmountable, but it is not. Empowering women and girls. We're going to talk more about that because women are not at the table. And until that happens, we're really screwed. And then also talking about this and dealing with it as a climate emergency, like you started out saying. And without that driving the train, we cannot hope to rectify any of these issues that they say we have to deal with.
Well, and to throw something over the top of that as well, and again, just looking at some of the past discussions of, about climate change, about how we change all of this, I hear people say, okay, fine, even if the U.S. adopted all of these draconian measures to reduce our emissions, to try and get to a zero carbon economy, you know, these developing economies like India, China, they're not going to do it. So it's not going to make any difference. And on that, I always kind of read into it this level of, I don't know exactly what to call it, but it's like, okay, we've had 150 years of growth where we polluted the heck out of the planet. we're fine. Now you guys want to emulate us. Well, there's something wrong with you. You know, so there's this cultural thing of we're going to look down our noses at you for trying to emulate what we already did. It's sort of like people who live in America saying there shouldn't be any immigrants coming to America, even though we're a nation of immigrants. You know, we got there first, therefore we want to punish you for coming later to the table. So but how do we address
fine.
That?
We're not fine. You said we're fine, so you guys.
Oh, I know,
you
know, but this is the perspective. This is the argument that's
right.
put
I
out
think
there.
That's, I think that is more, a lot more superficial than it sounds, because a lot of these countries are doing much more than we are doing. And they are recognizing they don't have a choice, whereas we act like we're still in the position of choosing what we want to do. And we have many, many corporations that are owned by this country who are in those countries. And they're there because they are not addressing any of these issues, and they have the freedom to not address them.
Well, and there was a recent study I saw that said, even if these other countries did not abide by reducing their carbon footprint, if the United States did these measures that will help the climate, it will have economic benefits that exceed the cost of it just in healthcare costs and in quality of life costs and in economic activity.
Right.
Because going green actually is a good economic stimulus program.
In every way. And when you look at even during COVID, what has happened just with the fact that people weren't driving as much. And so wildlife started coming back to downtown. And
well, we can't have that.
Plants started doing better. And, you know, so it's really the fact that corporate America drives the train. Is there the engineer? And we have to change that. So let's move on to the idea that women and girls, that empowering women and girls is an economic and client adaptation
strategy. Okay, convince me of this.
All right. So starting with, in this country, the Equal Rights Amendment, which actually probably started around 1848 with the first women's congress in Seneca Falls. I've been doing research for another project for this.
All right.
I got this. Anyway, the ERA, it's not only going to benefit women, it also prohibits discrimination on the basis of sex in multiple forms, including discrimination against men, sexual orientation, gender identity.
Right. Okay, but how does that help the climate?
Okay, because when women have the ability to earn the same money, have the opportunity to not be discriminated against in employment and other opportunities, things start to change. And when they look at the data of when women are in charge, when women are able to control their own bodies, their own livelihood, everything around them changes. This is across the board globally.
Okay. I don't disbelieve that. I just think it's not going to be an effective argument.
Okay, well, you say that all you want, but the reality is it doesn't hurt anything.
Well, no, I think we should do it. We should do it for sure, and that's a human rights thing. But
think
I think it's
cost,
a bit of a stretch.
Think of the cost of discrimination. It's unbelievable, and we've never monetized it, really. But when you think about the fact that if somebody is gay, or someone is transgendered, or someone is a woman, just because the way she's born, or they're born, whatever, and that is the reason that person is in poverty, or denied
sure.
employment, or denied a bank account, or whatever, this is a huge cost to the planet.
I can understand. If you're saying that, you know, let's say smarts, intelligence is an economic resource, and we simply don't utilize half of our intelligence
That's
because
right.
of someone's sex or orientation or whatever, that is very bad economics. That is very bad
so
resource utilization.
You're,
I know.
You're not buying it, but you're buying it.
I just thought it's not going to be something that I think in the sphere of the political discourse, it's going to be an effective argument. I believe you. But, you know, I think we've got some other tools in our tool belt to try and pull
out. Perhaps, but it's so provable. It's
all right.
Just provable.
Okie doke. Well, I want to take a break here and let people know that you are listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke, reminding you it is indeed the end of the world as we know it.
And thank God.
Thank God. All right. So as the UN climate report said, it is indeed the end of the world as we know it. And I think what they're telling us once again, as if we have to hear it 7,000 times, which apparently we do, that things have to change and they have to change dramatically. And one of the things, as you were mentioning, is individual actions, which will, of course, make a difference. But we have to have governmental solutions and we have to have corporate solutions.
Right.
So you were wanting to focus a little bit on, okay, it's fine for you to fix that drippy faucet, but we need Exxon to fix some things.
Yeah, you know? Or farmers. So we're going to talk about that, agriculture. It's not just farmers. It is the field of agriculture. So let's start out with something that you care deeply about, and that is the energy system, which does power economic growth.
Gotcha.
So by committing to source 100% renewable power and double energy productivity, companies are helping catalyze further, faster transition to a zero carbon energy system. By setting ambitious targets and integrating energy efficiency into business strategies, they're able to save energy costs. They're able to grow, as you were just saying, really beyond their expectation because of renewable energies. And they're able to deliver on their emission reduction goals, inspiring others to follow their lead. You know, one thing we know about corporations, they don't like to set a precedence. They're like the law. And so if somebody's doing it well, others are going to fall into line and say, I want to make money that way too.
I think we're seeing a perfect storm here when it comes to energy, because, you know, I like to say people don't do something because it's the right thing to do. They do it because it's in their economic self-interest to do it. And certainly corporations fall into that category. And we're seeing that renewable energy, wind and solar primarily, have become the cheapest form of energy that's available. So that's one thing that's happening. And it's a fairly recent development, really within the last decade, and people are becoming aware of it. We're also seeing that the, what's the young woman's name from Sweden or Norway?
I can't ever remember her last name.
Anyway, she sailed across the Atlantic in a boat and told basically the UN to go to hell, which was great. Well, that, that generation is starting to flex a little bit of their muscle. And these are the kids of the guys who are running the corporations. So these guys who go home each day are getting beat up by their own kids saying, okay, pops, what are you doing to fix the world?
Well, employees are asking this as well. And they want to work for companies.
And then you're
seeing
these environmental groups who are getting a little more savvy and pushing out there and saying, really, BP, you want to be the company that destroyed the world? Really, Coca-Cola, what are you doing to save the planet? You know, really, Google, you know, what are you doing?
Most of that's greenwashed, though.
I know, but it is. It has been.
Yeah.
But what's beginning to happen is the political pressure, the family pressure, and the economics are beginning to merge where these people can come back and say, you know what, we can decarbonize our industry. And not only do we look good, but we save some money. In fact, we're going to save a lot of money.
Well, and the more that marketing is able to show in their data that this is what people are demanding, the more they may lie to us, they may greenwash it, but then they're going to be forced. So let's move on to the transport.
No, I don't want to move on just yet, because I want to give you two examples. Because I know before we started talking, you said, I don't want to just keep talking about how the world's going to end and we're all in trouble. I want to talk about some of the positive things.
Well, I was just going to do that.
Okay, well, I'm going to beat you to the positive.
Okay, we're in
a race.
All right,
I have two examples from the corporate world that just happened in the last couple of months. One is from Microsoft, everybody's favorite.
Love to hate.
Yeah, oh my God.
Kind of like Walmart.
Yeah, so anyway, they've recently announced not only are they going to a net zero carbon footprint, they are going to go back to the dawn of the creation of their company and offset every carbon release that they are responsible for since they began. So they have to go negative carbon.
That's what the UN's asking to
yeah,
do.
And that's, so they put their hands yeah. up and they said, okay, we're there. And maybe even more significantly, there's a company called BlackRock. And BlackRock is one of these investment companies that the general public doesn't hear a lot about. But those people involved in big hedge funds and things like that know everything about BlackRock. BlackRock is the largest investment company in the world. They handle $7 trillion worth of investments. And if you think about it, the recent stimulus program is just under $2 trillion. And that's considered to be a mega thing. So this is more than three times the size of that program. And they've just recently announced they're getting out of fossil fuels. Getting out of coal.
I could feel the earth shaking when they said it.
I mean, maybe it's some greenwashing, but I think what they're really coming back and saying is it is in our financial interest
yes.
to get out of this world of fossil fuels, which we all know is on life support. And we're going to move into the world of renewability. And they're also going to lay on top of that a climate change agenda when they make these investments.
And but it's all because of money. It is not because sure. it's the right thing to do.
But it's still huge. It's huge yeah, it if huge. They do what they say they're going to yeah. do.
Well, even if they only do a tenth of it, it has great implications for people with investor people.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now you tell me your happy news.
All right, the happy news is that the next thing that needs to happen is there needs to be a focus on the transport sector.
Gotcha.
Because over half of all the registered vehicles on the road are owned by businesses. So the corporate commitment to increasing the pace of electric vehicle uptake and growing the market of the world's most sustainable fuels are vital to reducing urban emissions. And so what they're talking about then is integrating electric vehicles into directly owned or leased corporate fleets and pushing that agenda. And I think the government is going to push that. So they're placing requirements in service contracts for electric vehicle usage. So if you want to work for me, so if you're a company like Amazon and you deliver, and you're going to be subcontracted to or FedEx or UPS like at Christmas, you have to have an electrical vehicle.
I know the post office is getting electric vehicles, but also Lyft just recently announced, and Lyft is one of those Uber, that their drivers will have to drive electric vehicles. And apparently these vehicle like Lyft and those kind of companies lease a lot of these vehicles to their drivers. I always had this vision that these guys are using their own cars and
Uber,
and they're going an out, but they're actually they're leasing them from these companies, the professional drivers, the ones who do it as a full time job instead of the ones who just do it in the evenings.
Yeah, because apparently they care about some human being.
And there's some other apps, which I find quite interesting. People are moving to a model of getting away from car ownership. One of the concerns had to do with like range anxiety for long distance driving of electric vehicles, saying, what if I want to drive to California to visit my Aunt Martha or whatever? My vehicle's not going to make it. Well, kind of now moving to a model of I'm going to be leasing my vehicle from this company, say Avis, let's say, for example. But I can swap out whatever vehicle I need given what I'm going to be doing. So I might be driving
bicycles in big cities.
Yeah. I might be driving an electric vehicle every day when I'm working, but if I'm going to go on a trip, I just call them up and say, hey, could you come take the electric vehicle and give me one that can get me to California? And then when I come back, give me a different vehicle. So the vehicle is not, it's basically no longer do I own a car. Now I use a car.
Or be in love with the car or anything like
yeah,
that.
But
it's
I just
really
think
a tool.
I think that's way cool. I mean, the whole concept, and we can really begin to think of transportation as an app on your phone. If I need to go somewhere, I simply dial it up, and now I have my vehicle.
Well, I really would hope that we moved more to more mass transit than individual even leasing, but that's not on the agenda. But one thing that is supporting staff of these corporations to use electric vehicles by installing charging infrastructure at all their premises. Of course, the U.S. government's doing that in their military bases and a lot of places. And so corporate America hopefully is going to follow. And then supporting electric vehicle uptake by customers by installing charging infrastructure at all premises. And I'd like to say we have a good example because during COVID, we have gone to Marietta, Ohio quite often to have a picnic and hike. And there's one charging station there behind the armory, and we time everything so we can go there and recharge our vehicle, which is only good for about 30 miles. It doesn't get us all the way there, but mostly. And then we come back and take our vehicle.
Right. And we've talked about that the electric vehicle infrastructure will become sort of a free, you know, like every Walmart should have charging stations to keep people buying their garbage, or every movie theater, every restaurant, you know, you'll begin to just simply plug in your vehicle and charge it wherever you're shopping, the same way you can use Wi-Fi at every coffee shop. You know, they're trying to entice you to hang around so that you keep buying $6 a cup of coffee.
That's right. So let's talk about agriculture because I don't want to run out of time. So mm-hmm. The food and agriculture sector is crucial in meeting the Paris Agreement standards. They represent 25% of all greenhouse gas emissions, and they also are the most vulnerable to climate change. And one of the things I know that's coming for plants and trees and the soil are two things. One is drought or too much rain, and the other thing is extreme weather events. And so we see the impact on agriculture. And agriculture has no choice but to move from the corporate models that they have to the smaller producers who are more likely to do organic or at least natural care of the soil and growing of foods. So,
I would add to that resistant parasites and invasive species.
Well, yeah, insects and parasites. But increasing global food security is a big deal. And a lot of that comes from actually increasing by 50% more nutritious food being available instead of what we have right now. And so this will happen through increased production on existing lands, farmlands, producing ecosystem services and biodiversity, and then bringing degraded land back into productive use and reducing food loss from
okay.
the field.
Bottom line, are you feeling hopeful or are you feeling like we're all going to die?
Well, we're all going to die eventually, but here's what I am feeling hopeful about is that we have a different government and we have a couple of years to see if the United States can actually step up to the plate and be as good as countries like France and India and Germany and so forth.
Okay, so Biden, it's time to put up or shut up, right? Okay, so you've been listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke. We want to thank our ever sustainable and award-winning producer, Adam Rich, and we want to thank you for spending just a little bit of time with us. And as your grandmother hopefully told you, the secret to a happy and sustainable life is?
Let's see. Well, you better clean up your own mess, and you better play nice with others, and you need to eat your vegetables.
Grown locally, sustainably, without global warming.
Okay.
All right. Till next time. Bye-bye. Blossom in the night, you know the sky's dancing.
You can find more information on living sustainably in our unsustainable world at BlueRockStation.com.